and welcome to Clever Content, a podcast from Content OD, a content agency based in Sheffield. I'm Ian Broom, and today I'm joined by director, filmmaker, and the man with the joint second most appearances on the show, Phil Parkin.
Second most appearances on the show?
Yes, equal.
That means silver. It's so close. Well, I wasn't, was I?
Not just silver, but joint silver. So,
oh no, it gets worse.
So this episode of the 30 we recorded, you and Tom have both been on 16. I counted.
Oh wow!
And I'm the winner. I don't know whether that's a good thing or a
gold
bad thing.
Medal.
But there we go. And part of the reason for saying that is because this is it. This is the last one. Decisions have been made. A high level board meeting was had, and we decided that this will be the last episode of the Clever Content Show, formerly podcast. But this is not a sad day.
It's not a sad day at all. It's kind of been pre-planned. It's been all along. This has been a bit of a learning, test and learn, a bit of an experiment for us as an agency. And we, I think we knew really, didn't we, that it was going to have a shelf life as we hopefully got better and learned along the way. And the nice thing is that out of it is going to become hopefully two new podcasts.
That's right. Still to be decided on what they are or what they're about and what they're called.
Yeah.
But apart from that,
we've got a name for one, but we'll mull that over. We'll put it to the board, and we'll see what actually comes out in the end. But there's definitely going to be a shift. One of the things this has taught us is to really look at what we think our strengths are and where we think we can offer value. Other than our kind of basic knowledge of the industry, that's definitely shaping what's going to come in the future. So it's quite an exciting time to take it forward, and also now we've got a platform to jump off.
Indeed, and we're going to use this opportunity, this final show, to talk about, what we've learned, why you particularly, Phil, wanted to do a podcast in the first place all of almost 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Whether it's been a good thing or a bad thing. So our very special good bad, to finish with is...
Oh, I'm going to miss good bad.
Is basically this podcast.
What will Tom do on a weekly basis? He'll have to do some proper work, won't he?
I like to think he'll be doing his own personal good bads somewhere else.
He will.
But whether it's been a positive experience, a negative experience, highlights, lowlights, and a good bad on whether we would recommend starting a podcast to other people. Where should we start? Maybe we should start with the aims. So why did as an agency, as a content agency, looking to do some marketing for the agency itself, why did you think it was a good idea to do a podcast in the first place? What were the aims?
I think for me the main aim was to learn about the technical side of podcasting. Curious mind being that we deliver video and animation. We've got a lot of the kind of associated kit with audio. And obviously knowing the industry and looking at how things are changing in the industry, in the marketing industry, and what services are popular, where strategies can best unfold, and how you can get the best results for clients and their marketing when we do that. Podcasting was just something that I think we needed to do, and we needed to learn the best way to do it. And there's no better way to learn than just to do it. So I think that was the motivation for us, just to have a go and kind of upskill internally and bring all the other skills that we've got in video and storytelling and strategy and social media, and bring that all together so that we can look at podcasting in the future as a business for our clients.
Yeah.
And ourselves.
Yes. And I think that it was also to, I wouldn't just say, to have a bit of fun, but there was an element of finding a voice and using it to almost see what we know. I think that there was an element of that. I think that's been one of the really interesting things.
Well, I think culturally it's nice to be able to do something like this where we all share in it. And it does give us all a voice. It also lets us kind of talk to each other a little bit more as well on a kind of free and easy platform to understand what people like and don't like and where their interests are and what their personal experiences are. And I think that's all good. It's all good for us as a team. And we can't underestimate that. That's really important. When we work together, you know, 5 days a week, eight hours a day, it's nice to have things like this where we can kind of just breathe, exhale, and just kind of enjoy each other's company in some respects, but also get work value out of it.
Should we talk a little bit about numbers?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Because you have very bravely, Phil, decided to share numbers. And I say brave just in the sense that I think that lots of agencies particularly don't share the work, even with client work. You don't always get delivered, you do something, and then you move on. And very rarely do you actually sort of work in public. So I actually think it's quite a nice idea.
Yeah.
And we always said at the start, and this is genuinely true, because I remember having the conversation with you before we even recorded any podcasts, I said it's actually really difficult to make a success of agency podcasts, also blogs, and it goes for any social media, because ultimately it's a company and people know that. So if it's coming from a company, if for some reason it just...
It's an agenda, isn't it?
You know, the person listening goes, well, you know, they just want us to know more about their agency. It's, you know, it's a very transparent marketing tool.
Indeed.
And I think we have struggled to grow the podcast, and we don't know, it's very hard to know why, of course, but that has potentially been one of the issues, is that ultimately this is a podcast by coming directly from an agency. I like to think that this wasn't about us at all. There's plenty of episodes I can think of where Content OD itself was not even mentioned, I don't suspect.
No.
And that was a conscious decision.
Yeah.
But it's worth talking about the numbers, because it might give other people an idea of what to expect, possibly.
Yeah, I think definitely. I think it's important to be transparent. And I don't think we ever went into this to build the number one podcast listened to in under marketing. I think we did it to learn. So the numbers in our case, fortunately for us, have always been a little bit kind of secondary. But it is important to look at them and see, because we did use the numbers and the data coming back every week to kind of tweak and change the topics that we talk about or the format as we went along. So they've been used all along, but the overall numbers kind of, I suppose, create a picture as well. Have they contributed to why we're stopping? I don't really think so. No, I think it's served its purpose as 30 episodes is never gonna kind of generate what you want, I suppose, but in terms of pure stats. But it is gonna give you lots of things to discuss and lots of things to consider. So we looked at best episode, so there's a count on that, and overall downloads for the 30. So you've put these in. So best episode count was what?
It was 91 downloads for the very first episode, which is very typical, very often podcasts, because they've been around longer. The first episode would always be the most downloaded. Yeah. And then the second most downloaded was episode 16, which was an episode I did with Rich. Don't tell him, we'll get very, very excited. And that was about keeping up with the content industry. And that received 77 downloads so far. And overall, the show has been downloaded 1,454 times. We should also note, though, that whilst we've been recording this podcast, we use Simplecast for our hosting.
Yes, good point.
Good service, really good.
I know what you're going to say, yeah.
I've used it for lots of other stuff, no complaints, it's great. But they did have a big change. Simple Note 2 basically came out in the middle of our sort of 2-year period of recording. And in doing that, they not just our stats. I think across the board, the stats for the show, our show, just were halved practically.
Plummeted.
So it was really interesting, because we and I think that's quite common, and we have to take their word that the stats now are more accurate than the ones they had in the first place. But they were pretty inaccurate, and
they
I think
it's massively inaccurate. I mean, it was It caught us off guard a little bit, didn't it, looking at it? Because we had to actually then really analyse again what we were doing.
Yeah.
Because we'd been looking at that data all the way along. So it was, but then it was important that what that did for us, I think, gave us time to reflect and actually look at, remind ourselves again why we were doing it. And as I said earlier, I think it became a little bit secondary. We should say Simplecast itself has been really good for us. We found it, I've certainly found it very easy to use, to access, and it's made the practical side of owning, producing, distributing a podcast, getting it live, very, very easy. But that was one negative side of it, definitely.
Yeah, well, I don't necessarily know if it was Simplecast's fault. I think it's an industry-wide problem, actually, with statistics, is that it's very hard to measure.
We can blame Simplecast because we're paying them.
Well,
how much do we pay them, by the way, for the month?
It was originally $12 a month. I think it's slightly more now, but you pay every time you launch a podcast, then you will pay the same again with them. It's different with others. But it's an industry-wide problem. So this is something to consider if you're thinking of setting up a podcast. It is actually still very difficult to measure exactly how many people have listened and subscribed and who are subscribed to your podcast. And while we can see how many times it's been downloaded, some of those people might just have automatic downloads set up on their app, and then the show itself just sits there downloaded unlistened to, for example. So it's still like a growth area, as they say, in the industry itself, for people to and companies to work out better ways of doing stats. So that's how many people have listened, or how many downloads we've had.
Yeah.
We talked about our aims. I think the one thing that we, like you've said, really, that we have done is to constantly kind of review it. Even though the numbers are sort of relatively small, we've still thought, well, okay, so what are we doing that we could do differently? What's worked and what hasn't? And that kind of hasn't really been influenced by numbers. It's more just like a gut feeling we've had.
Yeah.
So there have, when we first started recording, we would talk more about like news items, really, things that had happened that we sort of found and thought were worth talking about, news, more like newsworthy content related stuff. And then we did a few episodes where we thought, right, okay, well, we need to be a bit more informative, a bit more educational. So we had a few episodes there where we talked more about our expertise. There was a few episodes, particularly around filmmaking, that we did with Rich and Dave, which were quite specific.
Yeah.
We're going to come on to why I think this is one of the important things to consider when you set up your own show. We then went back to a more kind of informal format where we would pick a couple of things. Tom got involved and the format changed again. So even over 30 episodes, it's been a process of reviewing and experimenting and changing. And I think that's, as an agency, even if you're concerned about, oh, well, this, you know, what's successful? What does success look like? It needs to have thousands and thousands of downloads. Actually, for Content OD, it has been a genuine process of experimenting, but doing it, like I said earlier, kind of doing it in public. And that part of it, I think, has been really valuable as a company.
I think going into it as a company, we knew clearly what we wanted to do. And the fact that we've got to 30 and we can honestly say that everybody's been involved in it, that for me is it. That's a big tick.
That's true. And very few agencies do that. It's usually just one person who has to do all the external comms and the poor sods just get left to it.
Yeah.
Should we talk about highlights before we go on to talk about what we could have done better, which is where I was kind of going with that.
Yeah.
Do you have any particular highlights?
I think the highlights for me have been seeing the evolution of it from something that we planned on paper through to getting everybody involved to then bringing some guests in and seeing the evolution happen as we learn and experimented. That for me has been great. The fringe benefits have been a highlight as well. Things like developing new relationships with guests and their agencies. That's been really good. So I think there are a few. I've also just really enjoyed doing something that feels like radio. That's quite cool.
Yeah, well, that's how I've always thought about podcasts, and it's just like a radio show that no one's asked for.
Yeah, yeah.
It's that you just decided yourself, I'm going to do a radio show.
Yeah.
For me, I think we've had some really good discussions. I think there's been, I don't think any podcast has got solid gold all the way through every single episode, but I think there are pockets of like 10 to 15 minutes here and there, which I think we can be really proud of, which are really either... dare I say it, insightful, or at least led to conversations that we may not have expected to have ourselves. And I think that's been great, and it's been a really good way of finding stuff out about each other. I think you already said that.
Yeah.
And those little pockets of discussions, I think, have been really, really interesting. I think the last one that we did, me and Tom did, I thought was pretty good. I think we've actually got better as we've gone along as well, which always happens. So if you do, again, let's go for a little bit of podcasting advice section. I've never listened to a podcast or recorded a podcast where the first episode has been the best episode, despite what the figures, numbers say. It's always been a process of working out how you talk to each other. So if you've got the same people on the show every week, like we tend to, or roughly the same people, even though you know those people in real life in more cases than not, it's totally different when you start talking on microphone. You do end up having a different relationship almost.
Yeah, definitely.
And so that's why shows tend to get better the more you do them. I'm sure if we record another 30 episodes, it would get more refined. We'd understand where each other starts and stops sentences, like the rhythm of the conversation, when to shut up and when to start butt in and start talking. And so that natural kind of cadence of a conversation, you don't get that straight away with a podcast. It comes after you've done several episodes. So that's been a highlight as well, seeing how we've kind of improved as we've gone.
Yeah, I agree. And I think what I've learned is that the show notes and the planning is really, really important. I never expected it not to be important. I think it was something that we did from the get-go. But again, I think we've got better at planning it in a more simplified fashion. So not trying to put too much in the show notes, but giving a format, a structure, and from that, being able to talk freely in a more relaxed way, which is easy to say, but when you're faced with a microphone, it's very easy to tense up, and I think you naturally get that in the first several episodes, and it does get easier. So
yeah, I think we've gone both ways with that as well. I think there have been episodes where you may have noticed, listeners, where we've kind of been really busy. We've been doing other stuff, so we've quickly put a Google Doc together. That's how we do the show notes, by the way, just a shared Google Doc, so anyone can pile in at any time. There have been times where we've more or less just turned on the mics and started recording with very little idea of what we're going to be talking about, apart from maybe like a subject heading, a title.
I'm going to say, we'd still always have show notes though, wouldn't we?
Oh yeah, and they're in front of us now, so they're always good for reference.
Yeah.
But we've also, I think, a couple of times gone the other end, and I think this has probably come when we've tried to be, right, we need to teach people things, we need to share our expertise, and the show notes have been much longer, it's been more almost like bullet points.
Yeah.
And then you can go the other way and find yourself not reading out, but there's less rhythm to the conversation. Yes. It feels like you're just going, making sure that you tick off your list that you've got in front of you. And it results in a less natural recording. And so I think that finding a balance between those two extremes is the way to go.
Yeah. I think for us as well, that taught us to understand where we're more comfortable. You know, where are we going to be the type of contributor that would be saying, right, I've got something here that I want to read you, and reading something out that was real and then giving an opinion, or just kind of trying to summarize from memory and talking. You kind of find your style and what you're comfortable with as you go along. And that's why I think it's always important to go in to these things, to a podcast, if you're just starting out, saying, you know, you've got to allow for learning. You've got to allow for testing and getting comfortable. And I think we certainly did that.
Yeah. What could we have done better? Let's go on to that.
The other side of it. Mm.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of things that we talked about on a weekly basis that we could do better. And that was part of the reviewing. for us. I think we both agreed that more focus would have been, a tighter focus for me would have been beneficial. So really thinking about, really nailing down who our audience is, who are we aiming this podcast at, and researching what things are, will be of value to them, and finding a way then to talk about that in a more natural way. So it's a kind of tighter format, more focus. And also what a big learning for us, and what we will do better in the future podcasts, is that we will be promoting them in a more targeted fashion. So we'll be thinking more about what happens when the mics go off.
And that's almost the hardest part, isn't it? Like recording the show, actually, once you've done it a few times, it's actually quite straightforward. It's actually trying to reach an audience. And that's the thing, as an agency, it's really difficult to do, because that's, you know, as you know, you do it for clients, you know that it takes time and money. But then when it comes to your own, it's much harder to then, you know, not only put the time aside to record something like this, or even to write a blog post, or however you choose to market yourself, to then actually promote it as is just a, you know, it's the same time again, if not more.
Yeah, time, resources, and budget. I mean, that's actually might be something
good for a podcast.
It might be something worth just touching on as well, because this has not been free for us to do. We've had to justify our time and costs, how those add up. We've had to justify the investment in equipment. We've had to justify any kind of testing around paid promotion that we've done. I mean, what we just had before we kind of pressed record, we had a little tot up, didn't we, on the equipment. I mean, what equipment have we got that we're currently recording on, for anybody who might be interested?
Well, I would think it's been a fairly DIY approach to the equipment, and you can hear that sometimes in the recordings, and also the environment as well, which plays a big part in it. We've initially recorded in the meeting room here, so we're here in Content OD HQ. It's in Park Hill in Sheffield, so it's a concrete building basically,
with a lot of glass.
With a lot of glass,
and which is not good for acoustics, is it?
No. So we've recorded in multiple places, and where we're recording right now is a first. This is the first time we've recorded on this particular table. But with we're in a meeting room, and that was quite echoey at first. And then we moved around to try and find better places. It's a working office, so we have people coming in and out. So we've kind of changed and bought equipment to try and counter those specific things as we've gone. But we've done it, you know, on a budget, frankly, because this is, you know, you could spend a fortune on podcasting equipment and recording equipment, and you don't necessarily need to. You need to, you know, like you said, there needs to be a reason to do that, a justification. So one of the things that we have done is invest in a mixing desk. So the microphones we use were already here. So
We had that as part of our... We naturally had some of the kit because of video production. So we've got good microphones. We've got a Sony microphone, and we've got a Rode NTG microphone, which are pretty in kind of... prosumer industry boom microphones. So they've been a benefit to us, haven't they?
Yeah. And then we had a third microphone that we use when there are three of us recording, which gets quite a different sound. You can notice.
Yes, you can.
The sound sometimes, well, I definitely know that from editing it, that you can hear the difference in that third microphone. It's not as expensive. It costs, what, 70 or 80 quid, something like that. Yeah. It's an Audio Technica. I can't remember the numbers. Yeah. 2100, something like that. It's a decent microphones, recommended to podcasters everywhere, but it's not as good as the two, the professional industry standard microphones that Content OD uses for full professional video production. So there is a bit of a difference there. You can figure things out in the editor. Yeah. The mixing desk, again, pretty budget mixing desk. It's a Behringer Xerix, let me just check.
Xerix Q1202 USB.
USB. So, but that's the key part, because we thought, well, you can invest in all, you know, completely XLR microphones and system. But we wanted the ease of being able to just record it straight into the laptop. Yeah. So
remember we started recording into the portable Tascam recorder.
Yes.
That we had as part of our audio, video audio kit.
Yeah.
So we started with that, and then invested in the mixing desk, and then went on to using the laptop, laptop, didn't we? So
I mean, if we were to start doing this now, we probably I wouldn't necessarily recommend this equipment. We might a little bit more. And
I think we will invest in some new microphones, some more stands for the microphones. I think we'll use a different editing software because we've kind of gone basic Bob with GarageBand, haven't we, with this, as we've moved on to the laptop record. We might start using something like, is it Audition, Adobe?
Yeah, or you can use Logic or something like that. Yeah. But I mean, really, with podcasts, it's really about making sure that you don't need many settings. It's just a few things you need to change.
Yeah.
So it is possible to do things with free software. Audacity, loads of people record with Audacity. Yeah. That's free software. Yeah. But the stuff that goes in, the microphones particularly, they're the important bits. Actually, to be honest, the environment, that's the most important.
The environment is very important. And I think where our strengths lie internally as an agency is we've got the skill set in-house to actually improve and refine in post-production. So that's probably where we'll invest a little bit more time and resources as well.
Shall we turn this into... continue the conversation, but try and answer a good, bad question.
Yeah, yes.
Okay.
Let's do it. I've always said we need a jingle for good, bad.
Well, I think it's a bit late now.
You said you were going to bring your xylophone in.
Did I?
Yeah.
Well, I lied.
Or is it a cowbell or something like that?
I've got a whole menagerie of equipment.
Animal-based equipment.
Yeah. So basically, doing your own podcast, good or bad, I mean, there is a saying these days, and it seems to be fairly accurate, is that everyone has a podcast or wants to do a podcast. Yeah. I did my first podcast back in 2009, so I feel like it's a full decade ago. Uh-huh. So I feel like it still seems a bit odd to me when I constantly, you know, see people on Twitter saying, you know, we're starting a podcast, got a great idea for a podcast. Yeah. It's become ubiquitous. It's become a thing.
Yes.
And part of the reason for that is the barrier to entry is much lower than it was, particularly with mobile apps, things like Anchor, designed for people to just be able to just, you know, record on their phone, publish directly to an app, and it all goes where it needs to go.
Yeah.
The problem with all of this is that it's harder to get noticed. And that's perfectly understandable. There are more and more people doing the same thing, then obviously it's more difficult to get noticed. But there's also much more money about. And as that's been more and more the case, then, as we've discussed on previous episodes, you go to the front page of Apple Podcasts now, it used to be iTunes, Apple Podcasts, then, you know, it's basically full of celebrities. If you like a particular celebrity, they will probably have a podcast these days.
Yeah.
And so it's much harder to get noticed if you're doing a niche show about a thing that you particularly enjoy. So if you really enjoy an irreverent take on football, there are hundreds and hundreds of thousands of football-related podcasts, but you're also competing against Peter Crouch's podcast now.
Yeah.
Football Weekly from The Guardian, although that has been around since the early days. But all of these different big media outlets or celebrities, former footballers, for example, they have a podcast.
Yeah.
And, you know, how do you persuade people to listen to yours as opposed to these people and these outlets that they're already aware of? So that's definitely a real challenge. And in some ways, I think you talked earlier about that we could have been more focused. For me, that focus is about subject matter and being a bit more niche. So clever content, we're talking about content and we're doing it in quite a general way.
Yeah, we are.
Part of the reason for that is that Content OD does lots of different things.
Yeah.
It was, we originally talked about it being a show about copywriting, video making, social media, and goodness knows what else.
Yeah.
And the reality is, if you're a filmmaker, you're probably going to go and find Filmmaker Weekly.
Yeah.
If you're a copywriter, you're probably going to find Copywriter Weekly. I don't know if those podcasts exist, but you know, you're going to go for that thing. You're perhaps less likely to listen to something that touches on various different subjects. And it's partly the reason we pull back on the expertise.
Yeah, definitely.
Expertise sharing side of things.
Definitely, yes.
So the barrier to entry is definitely much lower. For me, that's a good thing. I'm all for people making stuff. I don't really care if it makes it harder. If people are making stuff, being creative, then that's fine by me.
I'm just going to answer this personally. I've thoroughly enjoyed doing this podcast. It's felt like something that there's been I think you used the word fun earlier. It's definitely been fun. It's been something that I feel like has really helped us all have a voice in the office as well, and discuss things of interest. And it's that whole the kind of American water cooler moment. It's been a learning experience, but it's been a fun learning experience, and I've took a lot out of that.
Yeah, and in terms of a marketing exercise for an agency, I think, yes, there is one side of things where ideally you would attract new clients, build an audience, and it would be a very much an external thing. But internally, it's also kind of like a training. It's like training for employees in some ways, if you can persuade them to or make them come on the show.
Yeah, I think that I've wrestled with that a little bit throughout this, in that it's always been creeping into the back of my mind. What's the value in this for the business? What's the value in this for the business? What are we getting out of it? What's the return on investment? But in order for something to matter, you can't force that, especially when you're learning something. And I've always tried to keep reminding myself, let people enjoy doing this. And if they enjoy it and naturally a passion comes out, then that's great, because people hook onto that. They're going to hook onto that than they are, that 10 times more likely than they are us sat here going, right, in the video industry this week, we're going to talk about, because this has happened. It's like, it's just stayed boring, unentertaining, uninteresting garble. Whereas if they can talk passionately with enjoyment, I think it naturally spreads to the airways, hopefully.
That seems like an appropriate place to stop.
Indeed.
So, if you've enjoyed the Clever Content Show, the good news is we're not taking it offline. It's all there. If you want to go and listen to the previous 30 episodes, or previous 29 episodes, I suppose, then you should. There's some good stuff in there. There's lots of nuggets of wisdom, nuggets of nonsense. And you can do that by going to Apple Podcasts or whichever app you prefer to use. Just go and search for Clever Content and you'll find us. You can also go to the Content OD website, contentod.co.uk, go to /podcast and you'll find all the episodes there. And you can also find out more about the company, find out more about the projects that Content OD have worked on, particularly over the last couple of years. And feel free to get in touch anytime about anything. Until next time, on a different podcast, we'll call it a day.